It's Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you broadcasts from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. There's Westerns in this hour. Later on, an unusual story on Quiet Please. But first, it's Gunsmoke, a CBS episode from November 27th, 1955, called Amy's Good Deed.
Gunsmoke. Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gun smoke. Starring William Conrad, the transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America, and the story of a man who moved with
it. I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Think with that racket going on?
Oh. Well, I'm all through now, Mr. Dillon.
What are you doing anyway?
I'm nailing up a picture. Here, I'll show it to you. Ain't that a beautiful thing, Mr. Dillon?
It's got an awful lot of color, yeah. But what is it?
Why, that's William Henry Harrison whipping them Indians at Tippecanoe.
Oh. Well, this is the first time I knew he ever did it by himself.
Well, now, what do you know? I never noticed that. But it sure is pretty, though, ain't it?
Marshal Dillon?
I come in, ma'am.
So you're Matt Dillon.
Yes'm. What can I do for you?
You can call me Amy, for one thing. My name's Amy Slater.
All right, Amy.
I'm 50 years old and I look 60. The prairie done that. The prairie and some other things, Marshal.
Well, where are you from, Amy?
I've been living in Wichita the last year. And I heard you were here, so I took the Santa Fe Railroad and I come to Dodge.
Oh? Well, why'd you want to see me?
I've been waiting a long time to see you. I've been living for it. But I'm about through living.
What?
I come here to die, Marshal.
Oh, well, if you're sick, maybe Doc Adams can help you.
I ain't sick.
Well, then why are you talking about dying?
I've only got enough money to last me about 2 days, Marshal.
Well, if it's money you need, maybe I can help.
Oh, you're going to help me. But not that way.
Well, how?
You're going to kill me, Marshal.
What?
I said you're going to kill me.
Now, Amy, wait.
I've been waiting, Marshal. A long time.
The prairie does different things to different people. Some it gives knowledge to and strength. Others it breaks and leaves lost and twisted and wandering. Amy Slater was one of the lost. I let her go without trying to reason with her. I thought in a day or so I'd find her and buy her a ticket back to Wichita, and that'd be the end of it. But it didn't work out that way. She found me first. It was the next morning, just before noon. Chester and I were crossing the plaza when I saw her standing about 30 yards away, holding a rifle.
What's she up to, Mr. Dillon?
She's aiming that rifle at me, Chester. You better get out of the way.
She's crazy. Shoot her, Mr. Dillon. She'll kill you.
I can't shoot a woman, Chester.
Come back, Mr. Dillon.
The next shot will go through your heart, Marshal.
That won't do you any good, Amy.
I mean it.
I'm not gonna draw, Amy.
You afraid to fight?
Give me that rifle.
All right, take it.
I will.
You're afraid. You're a coward.
Why did you try to make me shoot you, Amy? What's this all about?
You wouldn't fight.
You weren't trying to kill me.
How do you know I wasn't?
You were shooting close. You were trying to make me draw.
I'll destroy you yet, Marshal.
By making me shoot a woman, is that it? Now, that'd be the end of me as a lawman, wouldn't it?
It'd be the end of you as any kind of man.
You must hate me an awful lot if you're willing to die for it. Why, Amy? What have I done to you? Amy?
Ain't you gonna arrest her, Mr. Dillon? You just gonna let her walk off like that?
Arresting her wouldn't do any good, Chester.
After what she done?
It didn't work, Chester. She's licked now. And I feel kind of sorry for her. This is really gonna drive her crazy.
Just look at the men lined up at that bar, Mr. Dillon. My, I wished I owned this saloon.
Cheap whiskey at fancy prices is always a good business, Chester.
Well, I ain't getting none of my money.
Oh, what did you come in here for?
To play a little faro.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Yes, sir. I ain't squandering a nickel at that bar. Not me.
Well, good luck, Chester.
Thank you.
Evening, Ma.
How are you, Kitty?
Sit down.
Thank you. That looks like a busy night.
That'll get worse. Wait till some of those boys really get a skinful.
Well, I hope they play gentle. I've been shot at once today.
I heard about that. Some old woman with a rifle.
Yeah, Amy Slater.
What's she after you for?
I have many idea, Kitty. And she feels pretty strong about it.
I guess she does.
Anyway, her plan didn't work, so maybe that's the last I'll hear of her.
You don't give women enough credit, Matt. She'll think of something else.
Well, I hope not.
Why don't you throw her in jail?
Oh, I'd look fine throwing an old woman in jail, wouldn't I? Especially one that's after me.
You got a right to. Besides, when a woman gets to hating somebody, it's usually worse than when a man does. Women don't do things by halves. With them, it's all or nothing.
Well, all I know about women is that some of them are pretty and some aren't.
You're lying. But I won't argue with you.
Good.
Marshal Dillon.
Matt.
Yeah, it's Amy.
And she's got a six gun.
Stand up, Marshal.
You better get out of the way, Kitty.
Yeah, you bet.
Step out here, Marshal.
What are you up to now, Amy?
I want to show you how I can handle a six gun. I want to show you what I can do with it.
Throw the gun down, Amy.
Not till I'm through with it. You can't fool me this time, Marshal.
Throw it down, Amy.
No.
You shot me. You shot me.
Oh.
How is she, Doc?
Oh, she's about the same. She's asleep now.
Now?
You scared her half to death, man.
Well, I had to shoot that gun out of her hand, Doc. Another second and she'd have killed me.
Yeah, I guess she really was after you this time, wasn't she?
What I don't understand is a woman brave enough to go gunning for a man fainting like that.
Well, she's got a fever, Matt. She's not well.
Oh?
But what she's really suffering from is hysteria. And there just isn't much I can do for that.
Well, she can't go on like this.
No, I suppose not. She'd probably be all right if she got over this business with you. Well,
she won't even say why she's after me, Doc.
No, she won't.
What are you going to do with her? You can't keep her here.
Well, I can't throw her out in the street. And you told me she doesn't have any money.
Yeah. Doc, I got an idea.
Yeah, well, what's that?
You know Ma Smiley?
Oh, of course I know Ma. She's been doing my laundry for years.
Well, she lives alone. Maybe she'd like company. Amy could help her with the work, huh?
Amy shouldn't do any work at all for a couple of weeks, Matt.
Then I'll pay for her room and board.
You'll pay for her room? So you're being awful good to a woman who just tried to kill you.
Oh, I feel sorry for her, Doc.
Oh. Maybe Amy won't like the idea of you helping
her. Now, don't you tell her. You tell her you're doing it, huh?
All right.
Look, why don't you go see Ma right now, and I'll stay out of it.
All right, I'll go then. But there's one thing that you ought to keep in mind, Matt.
Oh, what?
Just because she didn't make it tonight doesn't mean Amy won't try to kill you again.
Doc talked to Ma Smiley that night, and the next day, Amy moved in with her. I didn't have to worry about any trouble for a while. Doc ordered her to bed, and he saw to it that she stayed there. But she never talked. She never told anybody why she was after me. A couple of weeks passed before Doc reported she was up and about again and that she'd soon be able to go to work. At least I hoped it was work she'd be doing. Not gunning for me. A few days later, I found out. Chester and I were sitting in the office after dinner.
Mr. Dillon, you remember that fellow Jeremy Cracker who used to live around here?
Yeah, it'd be hard to forget him, Chester.
I was thinking about the time he ran a rusty nail into his foot. Remember how he went over to the Texas Trail and bought himself 2 pints of raw whiskey and he went outside and filled his shoe with 1 pint and himself with the other and slopped around town that way for days till he got cured. Why, my gracious,
Hello, Amy.
Hello, Marshal. Chester.
Hello.
It's all right, Marshal. I ain't got a gun.
Sit down, Amy.
Here's a chair.
Thank you.
How you feeling?
Pretty good, Marshal. But I'm going to feel a lot better when I tell you what I come for.
Oh?
I'll say it's simple, Marshal. I've been wrong, hating you the way I have. Done me more harm than you. I wanted to ruin you, but it's near ruined me instead. You understand?
Well, what's changed your mind, Amy?
Doc.
Doc?
He took it on himself to tell me. Figured I ought to know. Told me how you've been paying for my keep with Ma Smiley and after all I tried to do to you.
Well, you needed help, Amy. I don't bear grudges.
I do. At least I have, till now. I want to pay you back, Marshal.
Now, Amy, there's no need to repay me anything.
I've got to. For my own sake, I've got to. But I don't mean money. I've got no money.
Well, what do you mean?
Jim Band had a partner, Marshal.
Jim Band?
Dakota Territory, you remember.
Yeah, a long time ago. Jim Band tried to shoot me. He hit me, but I killed him.
That's right.
Amy, what's your name?
I'm his sister, Marshal.
Ah, I see.
Jim's partner's name was Emmett Gold.
Yeah, I remember him.
I never saw him after the shooting. Until today.
Till today?
About a half hour ago. He was walking into the Texas Trail. He's come to Dodge after you, Marshal. I know he has. He must have heard you was here somehow, and he's come to kill you.
After all these years, huh?
I didn't forget, did I?
No.
It's not easy to warn you about him, Marshal. Like I say, I'm doing it for my own sake. I won't be troubled no more now. I've done what's right.
Yeah.
We're even now, ain't we? You and me.
Yeah, we're even, Amy. And I'm mighty happy about it.
You just going to walk in on this fellow, Mr. Dillon?
Might as well get it over with, Chester. You stay out of the way, now.
Yes, sir.
Well, there he is. Emmett Gold?
Hello, Dillon.
You remember me?
Sure I do. You're Marshal now.
Yeah, that's right.
Been a long time.
Mm-hmm.
We was never friendly, Marshal.
No.
And what do you want?
What are you doing in Dodge, Gold?
I'm riding through. Headed for Colorado. As soon as I finish his drink.
Is that all?
That's all. What do you think I'm doing here?
Looking for me?
Looking for you? What for?
I shot Jim Band, didn't I?
It was a fair fight.
Yeah, of course it was.
You got shot too, didn't you?
I didn't get killed.
Wait a minute, Marshal. You think I'm after you for killing Jim Band, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, if that don't beat all.
What?
You remember where that fight happened?
I was on the prairie somewhere.
And Jim's bullet knocked you out. When you come to again, we was gone, wasn't we?
Well, you packed him off and buried him.
No, I didn't. I didn't bury him. He wasn't dead. You didn't kill him. He changed his name, went out to Virginia City. That's where he got killed in a brawl with the law about 2 years ago. So long, Marshal.
Well, I never heard anything like that in my whole life, Mr. Dillon.
No.
You think it's true?
He'd have no reason to lie, Chester.
Well, what's Amy going to think?
She isn't going to know, Chester.
What? Why not?
Amy did a big thing for herself, telling me about Gold being here.
But it was all useless.
No. Not unless we tell her it was. And I wouldn't spoil what Amy's done for anything. You know, on the frontier, feed for stock was scarce during the long winter months. And on our next gun smoke, a man dies because of a load of hay. So, until then, good night.
Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Our story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Tom Hanley and Bill James. Featured in the cast were Virginia Gregg and Harry Bartell. Parley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Christmas seals give your cards and packages that holiday look. Help fight tuberculosis. Buy and use Christmas seals. Join us again next week for another specially transcribed story as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke.
Gunsmoke, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 27, 1955 on CBS Radio. The television series would go on to use that same story on April 12, 1958. You're listening to an hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now a radio series unlikely to host a Western-themed story. It's Quiet Please, with Willis Cooper's tale, A Red and White Guidon, heard on Mutual on February 9, 1948.
Quiet Please. Quiet, please. Mutual Broadcasting System presents Quiet Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet Please for tonight is called A Red and White Guidon. Hey, troops, got a guidon now. It's nice. It's red and white. It's got all the old silver rings on the lance pole with names of places engraved on them. Cold Harbor, Spotsylvania, all them places. And some new ones. Samar, Leyte. Yeah, it looks fine. But it ain't the right one. It ain't the old silk one, the battle guidon. That's the one I lost for him. And I'm paying for it. No, it ain't that. You know the saying in the Army, whatever you lose, you're going to find it on the payroll. Ain't that. I'm paying for a difference. I walk into Fiddler's Green once, twice a year, and first thing some fella hollers at me, you get out of here, Noah Wellman. You're the fella lost eight troops guidon. And that free whiskey there in the bar looks awful good to me, but I wipe my mouth on my sleeve, turn around, go out again, change out of my old blue uniform with the wide yellow stripes on my breeches legs and my upside-down sergeant stripes. And I put on G.I. cotton and pick up my rifle and my bayonet. Go back to A-Troop. Rifle and bayonet. Imagine a cavalryman with a bayonet. Well, if you can imagine a cavalryman without no horse, I guess you can imagine a bayonet, too. Now, they won't lead me into Fiddler's Green. But once in a while, somebody will stop me as I'm leaving. Maybe it'll be Seamus Daly that was guidon before me. And he'll say, kind of homesick, hey, no, he'll say, the band's still playing Gary Owen in the old outfit. And I'll say, you bet your life, Seamus, when they don't play Gary Owen no more, there won't be no 7th Cavalry. Seamus, he kind of grins, and he slips me a half pint of that Monongahela rye. And I come away, and maybe there's a little nip in the bottle for some of the other boys that's in the same fix I'm in. And I walk along the ways with these other fellas, and most generally, we meet the old man. He'll be walking along slow in his spurs jingling. Them big Mexican spurs he always wore. And we'll snap it up and throw him a big salute, and he'll grin at us and holler, howdy, boys! And we'll say, howdy, sir! And he'll walk on slow down towards Fiddler's Green. And we'll feel worse than ever. Because the old man's He can't get into Fiddler's Green either. I don't know. Maybe I ought to tell you about this guidon, huh? You know what a guidon is. Well, it's a kind of little swallowtail flag. Nowadays, every outfit in the Army has one. Company flag, you know. All colors. Even the MPs, they got one that's yellow and green. But there was a day when nobody but cavalry had a guidon. Red and white. Top half red with a regiment's number in white. Lower half white with a troop letter in red, like 7A, A Troop, 7th Cavalry. Only when I first enlisted, they still called them companies, just like in the Doughboys. Yeah, it was quite a while ago. A troop, a company of cavalry, was quite a sight in them days. Old red and white guidon crackling away in the wind. 63 men in blue suits with their sabers flashing in the sunlight. And we had mounted bands. Yes, sir, drum major out the front with his saber beating time. 28 men on horseback blowing horns. And a big old white drum horse with kettle drums big as a keg of beer. Quite a sight. Nowadays, well, it's still cavalry, even if we do have our own feet. But I still kind of miss them horses. I met this Seamus Daly when I first joined up with the old outfit. I'd been in the war, and when they mustered us out in 65, I fooled around home for a while, and then I got kind of restless, so I just up and left. Went out west and took on another blanket, like the saying was. They put me into the 7th Cavalry, A Troop. A Company, I mean. That was where I first got to know this Seamus Daly. He was guidon of A Company. Oh, yeah, the guidon, the fellow that carries the boat called guidon. I remember the night I was sitting on the barracks porch. Doggone if I ain't forgot what post that was. Yeah, I'd been so many, D.A. Russell maybe, or Laramie, or Summers. Yeah, I was sitting there smoking this QM cigar in the dark all by my lonesome, and I hear this whistling. Gary Owen. Well, sir, thinks I, that can't be nobody but Sergeant Seamus Daly. Then Sergeant Seamus Daly has been at a bottle, Summers, on account of he don't whistle, Gary Owen, unless he has. So he steps up onto the porch, and I say in the dark, good evening, Sergeant Daly.
And who'll that be?
Me, Noah Wellman, the trumpeter.
Well, 'tis a fine night for a trumpeter, Wellman.
Fine night for what, Sergeant?
Well, for whatever you'd be wanting to do.
Oh.
Well, for having to drop a decorator, if you had the inclination, like.
Well, now, if anybody's to offer me a little stuff of some fine Monongahela rye, Sergeant.
Trumpeter Wellman, you know that a non-commissioned officer is forbid by regulations to drink with a private soldier.
Well, I'm a trumpeter, Sergeant.
Oh-ho. Well, now, I've been through the cavalry drill regulations. And the Army regulations tell me feet hurt. And I do not remember ever seeing anything about not drinking with trumpeters.
And besides, I was a sergeant once.
Ha! Oh, was it? Well, then, trumpeter, blow a blast for freedom onto the neck of this bottle, will you?
Sergeant, that's an order.
It does grasp you by the gullet now, don't it? Did you leave any for me?
Sure. Sure.
Then here is confusion to all the enemies of the Irish. Would you care to join me in an old ballad, maybe?
Not at this time of night, Sergeant. Them beds in the guardhouse is awful hard.
Many's the time I slept on them. At Jefferson Barracks now, they got bugs. This is a very clean guardhouse.
I like my own bug.
Well, then, seeing you won't sing, shall we have words?
Sure. Sit down.
You was in the war, was you not?
Company B, 2nd Michigan Cavalry.
Was you now? I was in the fires of wars from New York.
That was quite an outfit, I hear.
No, it was all right. But the uniforms was kind of silly-like. Red pants. Will you toot another tune on the bottle, trumpeter?
Thanks. To your health, Sergeant.
Sure, for that I thank you. And I drink to the Irish. And there's plenty of them in the 7th Cavalry. what would they do for sergeants without the Irish?
Yeah.
What would all the armies in the world do without the Irish?
I guess that's right.
Oh, we're lost men, we are. We've no flag nor no country to fight for. So we do our best for somebody else's flag and somebody else's country.
I suppose.
You're a lucky man, young Wellman, that you've got a country and a flag of your own to fight for.
Well, they ain't been doing much fighting so far since the war.
That'll come. There's millions of Indians, laddie, but that don't like the so-called white people. And the day'll come when they'll rise up in their might. And the air'll be so thick with arrows you could get up and chin yourself on them.
Yeah.
Many a lad'll do just that. And end up with his hair decorating some Ogallala Buck's war belt. So have a drink.
Gosh, Sergeant.
It's an order.
Well, powerful.
Like lamb's milk. No, me bucko, me larrapin great big ugly bucko. I am a man without a flag, living me life out in the field of battle, fighting for a country that's not me own, and perishing for the thoughts of the green shores of the old sod. Who's an old sod? You call me an old sod?
I didn't say a word, Sergeant.
That's what I said. No, sir, son. No, sir. Whiskey makes me mellow. The Irish have fought for many a king against many a king. One of me ancestors perished at Fontenoy, fighting for the King of France with the wild geese. And there's been an Irishman in every war since the Trojan War. But, Dad, there's been one on either side. How could you have an army without an Irishman?
You can't.
I am in me cup's trumpeter.
Well, that there is awful powerful whiskey, Sergeant.
When Irishman, there is no such thing as powerful whiskey, trumpeter. There is only weak men.
That's so.
Now, I said I had no flag of me own, son. I'm a homeless man, far away from the land of me birth. And I'm a lonesome man besides, and very unhappy.
Well, cheer up, Sergeant.
I was just about to say that I was going to cheer up, Trumpeter. Trumpeter, I forgot. I do have a flag to follow. No, to lead. Here, have another drop of the potsheen, lad, and I'll tell you all about it.
Well, go on.
Now, I said a flag to follow, lad. But it's not to follow. It's a flag to lead. And it's not that great Stars and Stripes thing that Clancy, the color sergeant, carries. For I'm not one of you Americans.
I'll take care, Sergeant.
Nor is it the great yellow standard that Miles Corrigan from Cavan carries. I grant you they're very fine flags, son. But Seamus Daly, he has his own personal flag to carry and to lead with. I could wish they'd chosen green instead of red and white for it. But it's a fine flag after all. And it has the symbol of... what is it the symbol of, Trunker?
What?
Huh?
What's the symbol of?
Oh, I'm talking about the guidon that I'm privileged to carry, my young friend. The guidon of Company A, 7th Cavalry. The only flag that Seamus Dennis Michael Brian O'Daly ever swore allegiance to. Do you hear me?
Huh?
You think I'm drunk? Now, listen, lad. There's been men died for that red and white rag. No, they didn't die for the other ones that the color sergeant carries. Them things is not the personal thing that the guidon is, lad. This is my flag, your flag. This is Captain Tom and you and me and that black-hearted Schlegel, the mess sergeant, and a thousand other men that died for it. And that will die for it in all the days to come. That's my flag, trumpeter, and that's yours. Don't you ever leave no harm come to it.
You should have brought your fiddle, Sergeant Daly.
Excuse me, sir. I didn't see the captain in the darkness. I was just discussing with the trumpeter.
You ain't drunk, Captain.
I see you're not. But you better go on into bed before somebody that doesn't know any better comes along.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Good night now.
Sir, God bless the 7th Cavalry.
And especially Company A, sir.
That's a good idea, boys. We're going to need all the blessings we can get. We're moving out into the field tomorrow. Go to bed now. There's call to quarters.
So we went out into the field and we stayed there. You ask me how I feel about the Indians? I don't know. Lots of ways they got a raw deal, I suppose, but you haven't got much time to think about that when you're dodging arrows and slugs from 45-70 Winchesters. And when you're right up to a place where the buzzards are sailing around overhead and you see what the Indians did to a fellow that slept next to you in barracks, then you don't think about it at all. New recruits come out to us from J.B. or Fort Hayes all the time to fill up the empty spots in the muster roll that the Indians made. In a couple of years, there wasn't very many of us old-timers left in A Company. Captain Tom, Seamus, me, a dozen others. And every once in a while, I think about what Seamus had said about our guide dog. I was beginning to understand how he felt about it deep down in his Irish soul. He never said anything about it, only just once. You see, it wasn't Indian fighting all the time. Sometimes there'd be periods when we could go hunting, maybe, or fishing if there was a trout stream not too far away. Never one man alone, never less than two. We carried our revolvers and our carbines and a full-pack saddle. This time, Seamus spoke of it again. We'd been out for 2 days, the two of us, hoping we'd find a deer. But we didn't. We didn't care too much. We had a good time away from the post. We were within a mile of the gate, riding along with that good, tired feeling a man has after a jaunt like this. And there was a shot. And I looked around, and Seamus was on the ground. Well, I don't want to tell you about the next few minutes. If you've never had anything like that happen to you, just be thankful I'm not telling you. And if you have, you know all about it. Anyway, what I want to tell you about is the talk we had. Seamus knew he was dying.
You won't go and leave me, Noah.
Of course I won't, Seamus.
He don't want him to get me there.
He'll have to get mine first.
And boy, did you see him at all?
There ain't a soul in sight.
They're watching, though.
Yeah. So am I.
None of that Monongi Hill left.
Yes. Yes, there is. Only a little, though.
Haven't got time to drink much, Noah.
Here, boy.
Oh, good luck. No.
What?
I remember a long time ago, we talked about Gaidon.
Yes, I remember.
Listen, you put Gaidon on my grave.
What?
Like a monument. My flag. All flag I ever had.
Drink, Seamus.
Sure. Drink to Gaidon. Company A. My flag. My monument. Now, you blow a blast for freedom, Noah.
No. I don't want to say this.
Drink.
All right.
Don't forget why I told you.
I won't.
Drink. Our hats so brave, they won the name of Gary Owen.
They heard the guns from the post, and a patrol came out and got us. And 7 or 8 more engines went to that happy hunting ground of theirs, too. Well, I kept my word to Seamus Daly. I couldn't put the troop guide on his grave, but I did go to the artificer and have him make a little wooden guide on, a little swallowtail, red and white flag, and a little lance pole. We put a 7 and the A on it, and Seamus's name. After the detail had fired the 3 rounds, and Jim Bolin sounded taps. I wanted to, but I couldn't. After that, I put the little guy down that had meant so much to him at the head of his grave. And it was a funny thing, you know. It started a thing in the regiment. Well, Seamus wasn't the only 7th Cavalryman who died those days. Some of them were buried way out in the Yellow Hills or along the walls of little canyons. But there wasn't a grave that wasn't marked with a little red and white guidon. Yes, there was quite a number of them. And I wonder what the coyotes and the prairie dogs thought. I wonder if there's any of those guidons left anywhere. That was better than 70 years ago. I guess they're not. Well, Captain Tom, he made me guidon. I'd not have thought so much about it before, I suppose, but you'd be surprised what that guidon meant to me. Or would you? Oh, I know it's the fashion to cry down soldiers. Sure, always is right after a war, but, well, soldiers ain't bad people, you know. Seamus Daly, Captain Tom, the old man. Yeah, that guidon was pretty important to me. Seamus said men had died for it. He died for it. He said men would die for it. That was true, too. Men always have to have something to follow, to believe in. A guidon. Yeah. Anyway, like Captain Tom said, I ought to have brung my fiddle. Captain Tom, him and me, we got to be pretty good friends. He was no officer to impose on enlisted man's time. He was all business. He was the kind of officer that, soldiers dream about. Strict, but A Company yet better than any other company in the squadron. And tough, but leave one of his troopers get sick or something, and Captain Tom was like his father and mother put together. He used to like to walk around him and even after tattoo. Sometimes I'd see him down around the stable or somewheres, and we'd stop and talk. He was always born to chew of eating tobacco. I remember that one night.
Give us a chew, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to buy you a plug one of these days.
You don't use up much, Captain.
Thanks, Noah. Fine night, eh?
Yes, sir. Sir, would the captain put in for a new lance pole for the guidon?
What's the matter with the one you got?
Well, sir, it's kind of warped a little bit. And, well, it's getting to look kind of, used-like.
You're as bad as Seamus Daly used to be with that guidon, Noah.
Well, I mean to be, Captain.
Poor Seamus. I had a great regard for that man.
Me too, sir.
Well, God rest his soul. He's better off than we are.
Yes, sir, I suppose so.
If ever a man went straight to Fiddler's Green, Seamus is the man.
Sir, Seamus said something about buying me a drink in Fiddler's Green. I never heard that expression before, and, well, I've been meaning ever since to ask
you
somebody.
You never heard of Fiddler's Green?
No, sir. Is that an Irish saying for heaven?
No, Sergeant. No. You see, good cavalrymen don't want to go to heaven because they won't find any of their friends there. And they don't want to go to the other place because they've had too much of that on earth. So, there's a very special place right in between the two that's for good cavalrymen only. And that's Fiddler's Green.
That's where Seamus would be then, sir.
Yes, sir. All the good cavalrymen from the day the world began are in Fiddler's Green. The Roman cataphracts of Julius Caesar, King Arthur and his knights, the Cavaliers and the Roundheads.
And Seamus sure is shooting, sir.
Yes, I believe that.
Well, I hope I make it.
You take care of that guidon, boy. You will.
I aim to, sir.
Well, thanks for the chew.
Welcome, sir.
Oh, say, want to take a little trip?
Yes, sir.
You knew my brother's coming out to command the regiment, didn't you?
Yes, sir, I heard that.
Well, I think I ought to send an escort out to bring him, as long as I'm senior officer present with troops. So you can take a detail of men for the troop and go pick him up and bring him back, huh?
Yes, sir, sure.
Good enough. You can start tomorrow night after retreat. Make it in a couple of days and a couple of days coming back.
Yes, sir.
All right, then. Come over to my quarters after breakfast tomorrow, and I'll give you the details.
Yes, sir.
Good night, Sergeant.
Good night, sir. I can remember that date just as plain. The 21st of June, 1875. I took my detail and we rode overland to the railroad. We met the new commanding officer. I apologized for not being an officer, but I said Captain Tom didn't have enough officers, so would the general pardon me, too? So he laughed. He was a great big jolly fellow. Looked just like his brother Tom. Big mustache, same yellow hair. And he says,
"That's all right, Sergeant. After I get hold of the regiment for a while, I'm going to see that we get enough officers so my sergeants won't have to work their heads off."
"That sure be fine, sir. That sure will. If the general's ready to go, sir,
move out.
Head him off. Move out. Forward, trot. Yo."
Asking questions about the Indians, about casualties, about the chance of one big campaign against them, finishing up the killing and murdering once and for all. He sure was anxious to make a good showing. And he knew his business. He was so glad to get into the open after being in them posts back east for so long. He asked me a million questions about Indian fighting, and I answered them best I could. I was getting to be quite a veteran then myself, see? And anybody that fought under Captain Tom would get to be a veteran awful fast anyway. So we had some pretty good talk. Then the second morning out on the way back, we had some breakfast. He was just saddling up. The general calls me over to him.
"Sergeant?"
"Yes, sir?"
"What's that up there on the side of that hill?"
"Where, sir?"
"Right over there, don't you see?"
"No, sir, I don't see anything."
"Look over my finger."
"Yes, sir." "What kind of thing, sir?"
"Oh, looks like a cavalry guider to me, but..."
"That couldn't be, sir."
"No?"
"At least, I don't think so."
"Well, I'll have a look through the glasses." "Yeah, by Jove, it is a guider. Here, look."
"Sir, I don't see nothing."
"Give me the glasses." "Yes, it is. I can see the number in the letter. It's the 7th, and it's Company A." "What could that be? Is Tom's..."
"Why, no, sir. But I think I know what it is."
"What?"
"That'd be the grave of a 7th cavalryman, sir. But I didn't know
that." "What's the name of that river down there?"
"Why, that's the Little Bighorn, General Custer." So you see, it was just 1 year later, the 25th of June, 1876, while everybody was enjoying the Centennial Exposition back east, that General Custer led us, me and Captain Tom Custer and all of us, onto that battlefield of the Little Bighorn. And, well, you know, we all got killed. It was a 7th Cavalryman's grave. Well, that's why we can't get into Fiddler's Green. I lost A Troop's guide on. Well, he lost the regiment. And neither one of us can get into Fiddler's Green till there isn't any more 7th Cavalry. And that'll be a long, long time.
listen to Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper. The man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell. And both Mr. Cooper and myself are mighty happy to have had Mr. Pat O'Malley with us tonight to play Seamus Daly. Captain Tom Custer was Arthur Cole, and Floyd Buckley played General George Armstrong Custer. The original music for Quiet, Please is composed and played by Albert Berman. Now for a word about next week's Quiet, Please. Here is our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
My story for next week is called Quince Cameo. It's about a man who traveled in the East, and well, you listen, will you?
And so, until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell.
Quiet, Please, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 9th of February, 1948, on Mutual Radio. And that wraps up this hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.